everybody. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Welcome to Beekeeping for Newbies. Thank you very, very much for taking the time to listen. I do appreciate you. And as always, feel free to join us over in the Discord room. The link to that is on the Beekeeping for Newbies homepage. It's newbees.com. And it should be about halfway down on the left-hand side. If you'd like to join us over there and chit-chat about all the things in the world that are going on, beekeeping and not beekeeping. In fact, if you're somebody who's into making mead, we got a lot of folks in there who are talking about mead and some of their cool recipes from around the world. Lots of different things going on. And a special thank you to all of our Buy Me a Coffee listeners. I definitely could not do it without all of you, so thank you very much for your support. Today's warm-up song is going to be Son of a Sailor by my good friend James Buffet, or as some people call him, Jimmy Buffett, you know, potato, potato. But God rest his soul. Certainly makes me want to drink a little rum every time I think about him. All right, everyone. So I have been teasing this project for probably, it's at least been 6 months, I think, since I first brought it up. And I think it's time now. We're here. We're going to get started on it. And I wanted to give you an overview, kind of a voice overview. And then what we're going to do is we're going to shift over and do a full video. In the video, I'm going to show every part and piece. So the first video, I'm not exactly sure how I'm going to do, because it's really challenging with YouTube, because when I'm really interested in something, I will sit down and I will watch it from beginning to end. If it's a 10 or 15 minute video, I watch 10 or 15 minutes because I'm interested in the topic. I don't know what the secret is. Like, I am not going to do all the sound effects and things flashing all over the place and words spinning left and right to keep people entertained. Like, I'm just not going to do that. I'm not putting that level of energy into it. So if that's what you need, sorry, probably not your guy, but I'm going to put an informative video out. And what I'm trying to figure out is exactly how to do that. I don't want to do like a 30 or 40 minute video that has everything in one piece, because I feel like if I do that, some people see 40 minutes and they're like, I can't even do it. I've found that like 8 to 12 minutes is kind of a decent sweet spot. So either way, I'll probably break this down into maybe 3 or 4 intro videos. But what we're going to do in that is walk through what the project is that we're talking about today. But I'll talk more about the video a little bit later. And if you're a tech person, right, if you're sort of into beekeeping, or you're kind of, you know, thinking about getting into beekeeping, but you really are, you know, a technology geek and you like doing cool things, this would be a great opportunity to join the Discord room. I think I'm going to create maybe like a projects channel inside there just to talk about these things. I'm open to ideas and thoughts on this, so feel free to share your ideas as you hear about what we're trying to do. So a big challenge and dilemma and issue we have that confronts, you know, all beekeepers are confronted with this, and it's that wondering about the status and the health of your bees over the wintertime. You know, are they starving? Are they alive and well? You know, are they still clustered? Are they moving around? You know, what's going on? And it's kind of it's an interesting waiting game when you drive by the hive every day, or you walk past the hive every day, and you're thinking, well, it's 45, you know, Fahrenheit. It's like, well, I don't know what that is, 9 Celsius, I think, something like that. And you're like, well, it's a little too cold for them to fly. Maybe I'll see one of them come out. And you just want to know they're okay. You want to have a little health check. And of course, you can go up and you can kind of knock on the hive a little bit, and you can hear them, you know, ramp up a little bit of a light roar or a buzz, and kind of know that they're still there. But how actionable is that? Like, how much real information can you get from that? Now, the traditional method of doing things, and I've kind of said this a few times for what I do, you know, I won't mess with them until February. I like to, you know, whatever genetics they need to have, you know, that pretty much gets flushed out by January. And then you get to February, that's where potential starving issues tend to present themselves, you know, where I'm keeping bees. So that's when I will take a look. But what you're kind of forced doing is waiting until you have that nice warm day. You pop the lid, you look inside, and you just want to see, can you see the cluster? Are they up near the top? Are they still down consuming food, you know, lower? You know, the higher they go, generally the less food they have left. Now, they may be in that upper hive body and still have 5 frames to go, right? They may be on the second or third one and still have plenty of room left. But being able to know where they are, what resources are left, like, these are all things that would be really, really great to know. And, you know, you open up the hive in conditions like that. There are a lot of people I know that are opening up the hive 2 or 3 times a month all winter long. I don't like to do that. You're letting out a whole lot of heat when you do that. And generally, yeah, the bees probably will be okay. right? Let's say that it's 40 degrees Fahrenheit. I don't know what that is, like 7 Celsius, something like that. So yeah, you can definitely open it up and let out all their heat and look inside and be like, oh, cool, close it up and they probably won't die. I just don't like doing it. It's not what they want. It's not what's best for them. And I really don't want to do it. Again, if you have to intervene because you know that they're light and they need help, by all means do so. But I don't want to make a habit of this. So for the longest time, I kept thinking, like, there's got to be a better way. There's got to be some other way to, you know, to figure this out. And there's a lot of people that will still use, like, weight, like the weight approach. They'll walk up to the hive in the wintertime and lift up. And depending on how many fingers that they have to use to lift it up, that tells them roughly how heavy the inside of the hive is. And they've gauged that over years of doing that. And again, that's great to tell somebody who has that level of experience. But your hardware is different. Your configuration is different. So you can't really just say, oh yeah, so many fingers of lift for a 5'2" individual who is small in stature is different from a 6'5" individual who is, you know, much larger in stature. So individual hand strength, finger strength, all that stuff is kind of weird. I want real data. Like, I want something that I can look at and say, this is exactly what's going on in the hive. And it's become a bit of a monster. It started out as just kind of a couple of ideas like, oh, maybe I'll try this, maybe I'll try that. And now it's a full-blown, like, really, really cool, fun thing. So here is my goal. I want to be able to track the temperature inside the hive. Now, like, my original part of this was I just want to know what the temperature is in the hive. And humidity, that's right. I wanted to have temperature and humidity. And then the sensor that I was kind of looking at has temperature, humidity, and barometric pressure. And I was like, okay, cool. You know, barometric pressure could help, you know, with getting an understanding of when low pressure systems are coming in, when you're having inclement weather. You can gauge possible changes in temperature and things associated with, see if there's any correlation between higher or lower pressure and energy used and things like that. But again, temperature and humidity were kind of the big ones I wanted to check in on. And so at first it started with, I just want to gauge the temperature. I was like, well, knowing the temperature just in the hive really isn't going to be enough. I need to know where the cluster is. So I can't really attach a sensor to like the queen and be like, all right, wherever you go, you know, we'll know what the temperature is. Like, that's not going to work. So the solution that I settled on is I'm going to basically have probes. And I think as of now, it's going to be somewhere between 18 and 20 probes per double deep configuration. And if it was a double deep with a medium on top with, you know, an additional honey super, then we would just move the sensors to the top two. Whatever the top two hive bodies are, that's what we're going to monitor. And there's going to be two sensors per like side of the frame, basically. So between frames 1 and 2, there will be two sensors. Between frames 2 and 3, two sensors, all the way up to, you know, between 9 and 10. I'm not going to put a sensor between the wall and frame 1 or between the wall and frame 10. But everything in between will have a sensor. Now, my idea here with having all of these sensors is that as the cluster is moving, I will be able to know there's a difference in temperature. So it's cool to be able to know that the temperature is changing and where it's changing and roughly being able to gauge, you know, where the cluster has moved throughout the winter. But I mean, how do I get that? How do I see that? How does that become something I can do anything with? So I thought, well, I have to measure the data and I have to collect it. I have to hold on to the data and then I have to be able to extract the data and then take it from whatever format it is and put it into some kind of a visual format that is meaningful. Like if I said to all of you, like, hey, I've got this really cool thing I want to show you, and you just see a spreadsheet with a whole bunch of numbers, yeah, maybe you'll take the time to look at it, but I'm probably not. Like, give me a nice pretty picture. Like, give me something that I can just look at that is aesthetically pleasing and makes the point and is crystal clear. So I started thinking, like, okay, you know what? I'll collect the data and then I will upload it to some kind of a software, some kind of a capability to basically make a heat map. So I will aggregate all of the time and temperature data from all the sensors and whatever interval, let's say it's every 15 minutes. And whatever the temperature is at that 15-minute point, it collects all of them. And then I'm able to upload that into something that creates a heat map. So now I have a diagram, just envision like a diagram of a hive from the side view of a double deep configuration. And then you can actually see a heat map. And it'll be, let's say it's a darker red or white, you know, where the core is. And maybe the mantle might have like a, like an orangey yellow kind of edge to it, different kind of color. And then the rest of the hive might be like a lighter blue or a blue color indicating that it's cooler, whatever the color scheme is that makes the most sense. So it gives me kind of a point in time. I want to be able to track it. So then I thought, okay, I'm going to collect the data and I will continue to collect the data over a period of time. And then I can upload all the data at once. And then I can say, okay, just hit like the play button and play it back at, I don't know what it is, maybe let's say 1 hour every 10 seconds or something like that, and just have it play. And then you can literally watch the cluster as it moves, you know, through the hive, consuming resources and all that. So then, of course, this continues to grow and become a bigger project as time goes by, because now what I've got is, I thought, nope, you know, I'm going to do this better. I'm going to just walk up and it's going to be like a Wi-Fi or a Bluetooth connection or something like that. I'll have it present all the data at the hive, and then I can just bring it up and look at it on a tablet or my phone, like through a web browser or whatever. I mean, I'm like, this will be great. This will be perfect. And I'm like, well, wait a minute. How do I share it with all of you? Because that's the cool part. Like, I want all of you to see this and to say, holy cow, like that's something I can use in my hives. Let me follow along with the project, build it myself. And hopefully that brings, you know, some value to your apiary and gives you information to make you better at what you're doing. So for me doing it that way, that didn't really help. So then I started thinking, okay, well, it's like 200 feet from a lot of my hives and my hive areas to my house. So it's a little long for Wi-Fi. So long story, I'm not going to go into all details, but I've figured out a way to get Wi-Fi to within about 30 to 40 feet away. So now what I'm going to do is collect the data on that 15-minute interval, if that's what makes sense. The data is going to auto-push to the Beekeeping for Newbies website. There's going to be a separate section in there where you can track, you know, real-time hive data. And you'll be able to go in there and look at real-time. How many hives do I have set up? What's the core temperature and humidity? All the environmental specs are going to be there. You hit the play button for the last hour, last day, last 4 days, last month, whatever. And you can just play and watch it go along. Watch the cluster move. So I've got that much is in place, right? I've got that kind of concept of operations. I've got, you know, the way that everything should come together. And then I've got to take it to the next level. I started thinking, you know, like, what if I had an apiary that was kind of in a remote area? And it wasn't necessarily that it was remote. It was just maybe it's down some trails, down a wooded, you know, in a wooded area or someplace that's a little bit more secluded. And you just don't want to necessarily, let's say you had like, it's the back of a cornfield somewhere and it's really sloppy. You had a lot of rain, maybe some flooding, and you don't want to drive back there. Maybe you can't even drive back there. I'm going to mount a collector node onto a drone that I can then fly over. It auto detects that it's within range, downloads the data, brings it back to me. And then I upload that data and present that. So that's another thing that we're going to do. That's going to be like a later phase, but that's still part of like the this winter testing kind of thing for this. So I know, I'm pretty sure that there is someone else out there, multiple people out there that are already doing this, have done the exact same thing, probably have done it better. And that's cool. That's great. My goal is not like, oh my gosh, I really have to see hive data in action. That's part of it. Like, I want to see that. I think that's cool. But what I'm really aiming for is to make something, to design something using commercial off the shelf, like COTS, you know, hardware and open source software, open source tools. And then just buying parts, pieces, and components that are available from like AliExpress or Amazon or wherever you buy all those little things. And just to have some fun, like I am 100% fine with the idea of reinventing the wheel on this. You know, like if I hit an obstacle, a roadblock, and I can't figure something out, I might start looking at what other people have done. How did they solve a particular problem? You know, but I just want to have fun with the project. I think it's good to stimulate the mind. I think it's just people are, as people, we're just designed to build and create things. And I think the more that we depend on AI and other things to make life easier, the more that we immerse ourselves in the federal tracking device that everybody has in their hand all the time. I think that the more we do all of that, we're risking becoming so dependent on these things, and we're just becoming a less capable people. So I think we need to keep those creative parts of our brains working to hopefully, you know, innovate our way out of some of the messes we've created throughout the world and the way that we share this world with each other and everything else that lives here. So that's sort of my whole vision for all of this. So a non-invasive hive monitoring approach, providing current and historical data. Like I said, being able to play it back 24 hours, 7 days, 30 days, whatever makes the most sense. And then being able to take that data and start making it actionable, saying, okay, my colonies that overwintered, like this is what that overwintering profile looked like. Their average temperature was this. Any other metrics I have, the more data you have, the more you can start correlating, you know, success and failure and being able to understand really what's going on. That first cup of coffee really sets the tone for the whole day. If you haven't tried an AeroPress yet, you're in for something special. AeroPress uses a unique brewing method that delivers a smooth, rich, and balanced cup of coffee with less bitterness. So you actually taste the roast, the origin, and the full character of the beans. Smooth, balanced, and full-bodied. It's like the best part of a French press, a pour-over, and even espresso combined into one compact brewer. And it's built for real life. Durable, portable, and consistently great whether you're at home, at work, on the road, camping, or traveling anywhere life takes you. Plus, it's the fastest single cup maker out there. About 2 minutes start to finish, including cleanup, so you're never waiting long for great coffee. AeroPress is shockingly affordable, less than $50, and we've got an incredible offer. Visit AeroPress.com/honey. That's AeroPress.com/honey and use promo code honey to save 20% off your order. That's AeroPress.com/honey, promo code honey at checkout. So ditch the drive-thru, skip the bulky gear, and start your mornings with a better cup of coffee wherever you are. Big thanks to AeroPress for sponsoring this show. Eating healthy can feel like a chore sometimes, right? But I've found something that makes it easy and delicious. Washington Red Raspberries. These aren't just any frozen berries. They're grown by family farmers in Washington State, picked at peak ripeness and frozen within hours to lock in nutrients. We're talking fiber, antioxidants, vitamin C, real nutrition with no added sugar, just fruit as nature intended. I toss them into smoothies, stir them into yogurt, and even top my oatmeal with them. They're so fresh and full of flavor, I actually look forward to eating healthier. And honestly, it feels so good knowing I'm supporting American family farms every time I grab a bag, and you'll know they're grown right here in the U.S. because it says so on the package. You can find Washington Red Raspberries at Costco, Kroger, Meijer, and Winco Foods. Look for them in Kirkland's 3-Berry Blend, Smucker's Raspberry Jam, Peanut Butter and Raspberry Uncrustables, or those True Fruit chocolate-covered raspberries I can't stop snacking on. Want recipes, tips, or to see all the places you can find them? Go to redraz.org. That's redraz.org. All right, so let's talk about how this is going to work. I mentioned temperature probes, so we're going to be using a board that's called an ESP32. The ESP32 boards are going to have the probes, the humidity, pressure, all these temperature settings. These are going to be individual modules. There's a single module that does pressure, temperature, and humidity. That's a single module going onto the ESP32 board. The probes, I'm going to actually have to get like some accessory boards because you have to like wire them up. I think they're in different groups and clusters, and there's a lot of ways you can manage those, but they have to be individually labeled and make sure that we can track each one. And there is going to be some work involved in, okay, so this is hive body one, frame one, position one, hive body one, frame one, position two, right? That kind of thing. And figuring out how to do all of that. But from a hardware standpoint, the ESP32 nodes are going to be what is collecting the data in the hive. They are then going to be going to a Raspberry Pi, which is like a consolidated data collector. So you have the data gatherer, and then you have the data collector. And we're going to be using the Raspberry Pi 3 plus B Bravos. I think that's what we're going to use for now. I mean, going any lower than that, and there are some areas we might be sacrificing. I want to make sure I have a full RJ45 Ethernet port on there. And there's a couple other technical reasons why I'm looking at the Pi 3 plus Bravo. You know, using a 4 or 5 would be fine, but it's kind of overkill for this type of project. We're going to have storage redundancy. So in the event that there's any kind of a failure with data coming out or data being presented or uploaded in any way, I left something out. It reminded me. I'll come back to it. In the event that there's any kind of an issue with the data, we are going to have backups of that stored on an SD card on the individual devices as well. on the Raspberry Pi, so you won't lose the data. I forgot to mention, I was talking about internet connectivity and all these other things, but the end goal is actually going to have the data auto push. I don't know if I mentioned this. Once that full Wi-Fi internet connection is in place, the data will auto push directly to the website. I will not be the intermediary anymore, you know, manually doing that. So I forgot. I'm not sure if I mentioned that. Anyway, so aside from the storage, like I said, we're still going to have four different paths of data that we can look at for collection. So I can at least show you it's an option. The walk up and check method via Wi-Fi, Bluetooth kind of thing. If you wanted to do, like if you were really in a truly remote area, you could definitely, you know, set up a link to do cellular or Starlink or something like that. I'm not going to be going through that at all. So for what I'm trying to do is just walk up, Wi-Fi, and then, like I said, the drone flyover. Those are the three things I'm going to try and do. So let's talk about the phases for the project so I can walk you through exactly how this is all going to come together. Phase one is strictly the hardware build of the compute IT portion of this. So I'm going to get all the boards, do all the soldering. I have a device that I can never remember what it's called. It's made by Rigol, R-I-G-O-L. And it is a load testing machine. So you can apply a certain voltage or create a certain voltage drain. It's a really powerful electronics device that I bought for a different project. And it's really going to be great to be able to know exactly how much power each of these components is going to use and draw, because that'll be useful in phase two. So phase one is building, soldering, making sure everything is physically working. And that will consist of all five. I'm not sure if I mentioned we're doing five hives in this first round. So we're going to have five hives fully set up with the Pi collector, getting all of those working together. And once I validate, I don't care if they all show the same temperature, same humidity, same whatever. This is all going to be in my garage, powered on, and they're all working. We got power. Great. Now we start running actual electrical testing. That's where we get into phase two, is going to be integrating in with power, making sure that the scoping and the spec for the like car-sized battery and a solar panel and charge controller, making sure that all of those things are spec'd appropriately and that we're going to be able to have sufficient power. The vision that I see in my mind is like a 100-watt solar panel with a car battery, charge controller, and we'll never run out of power. Even in the winter with three, four hours of sunlight and four cloudy days in a row or whatever, I still feel like we're going to have plenty of energy, but I will know as I'm going through kind of like that phase two, you know, setup and testing. Now going into phase three, this is where I'm going to physically have, I'm probably just going to start with like two hives, and I will put two of them in my garage and put up the collector node as well as the two individual sensor nodes. And I will start running it and testing it and making sure that the data is collecting, it's uploading, it's going to the Beekeeping for Newbies website. I'm able to do everything that I need to, not necessarily everything, but at least I need the data to go from point A to point B. So can I take the data from the sensor node, push it to the collector node, push it to the website, and be able to visualize it? So all of that stuff is kind of baked into that phase three. I think that's going to take a couple of weeks. It could very well take a month to get all of that going. Phase four is my full yard system integration. This is where I'm going to go into the yard, get all five of them completely set up, the full solar setup, the, you know, waterproofing of everything, finding ways to, you know, carefully and strategically get things mounted under the hive, making sure I'm using like IP rated boxes to prevent moisture and things from getting in, but also not letting anything overheat. Lots of little nuances to all of that. And as a part of that phase four, I'm going to be bringing in some insulation, some insulating, hive insulating solutions. So we'll have just a regular, you know, Langstroth hive with nothing. It's just a box, inner cover, outer cover. That's it. We'll have another one with my all season inner cover. And then I got a couple things worked out for some insulative, I'm not going to go into the details quite yet. We'll cover that later, but some insulating solutions that will insulate nukes, 8 frames, 10 frames, kind of whatever solution you would need. I will have those set up as well. And that's, again, just a 30-day observation window. During that, what I'm calling like a phase 4A, That's where I'll do, in parallel to that data gathering and just assessing things, I'll be doing like the drone flyover. I'm going to work on that part. And hopefully after that 30-day period is up, I will have a really good handle on what still needs to be addressed, fixed, fine-tuned. I should know, oh, I left out a really key element of this. In addition to all the data gathering that we're talking about, I forgot the funnest, coolest thing about this, and I completely left out of my phase three. I don't even think I talked about it. The phase three portion, which I apparently skipped right over, I had these heat-generating strips. And in addition to having multiple sensors in to detect temperature, I'm going to have a whole bunch of these heat-generating strips all over the hive. And then I'm going to have to, this is the part that's going to require a little bit of some coding and some strategery on my part, but I've got to figure out how to make it look like the cluster is actually moving by changing the temperatures. So I want to try to program it on some kind of a loop, maybe like a 48-hour loop or a 72-hour loop, where the cluster just goes from front right to, I'm sorry, like front left to back left to back middle to front right, back second hive body, you know, like basically where it looks like the cluster is just moving all over the hive, even though that's not exactly how it would move. I've got to figure out a way to get those heat generating strips to kind of go on a rotation. So I'm going to have basically like a thermostatic control that says, you know, apply power to this relay and this circuit from this period to that period when the temperature is from here to here. So let's just say as an example that I want the, we're not at a brood raising time. So let's just say I want the core temperature to be around 80 degrees Fahrenheit. I'm going to take a shot in the dark here and say that's going to be, is that like maybe 25 Celsius maybe? I don't really know. Sorry about that, guys. But around 80 Fahrenheit roughly. And then I'm going to say, okay, if the temperature in this hive gets to 82, shut off the heat. If it gets below 75, let's say, turn the heat back on. The reason that this is going to be important is I have another module that's going to be integrated in this that's going to be maintaining a log of all of the watts, you know, kilowatt hours, watt hours, amp hours, like all of the electronic and electricity measurements that can be taken. It's going to be taken across all of them. So the hive that has no insulation, the hive that has the all-season inner cover, the hive that has another commercial insulation solution. So we will have both control groups as well as other things to be experimenting with. My hypothesis here is that everything that adds something on that is of an insulative property or will have some insulative benefit will reduce the overall power usage. That just seems like common sense. But that's what I really want to see is can I add these insulating solutions onto this and then measure and say, okay, well, the one that had the most insulation had a 70% reduction in energy utilization. Okay, now can I convert power, like watts, energy, can I convert this energy into honey to say, well, to generate this much energy in watts would require so many frames of honey? And then I can start to say, okay, so if the hive on the right that was fully insulated, if that colony had 12 total frames of resources, it would have survived this past winter. But in order for the hive three over that had nothing on it at all, it was just a regular traditional Langstroth setup, it used X amount of, you know, energy. So it would have had to have had 25 frames of resources or, you know, whatever that math might come out to be. That's going to be the whole like super duper cool part about this whole thing is being able to say, wow, like leveraging some of these insulation, you know, technologies has allowed us to have a colony that is much more efficient over the winter. And then that's where it starts to open up other doors for you to say, well, geez, I don't have to feed as much going into the winter because I know exactly how much my bees need. And then when you're in the winter and you get to that late January, February timeframe, you're monitoring the cluster and you know, well, based on my past 3 years of data, if the temperature gets below whatever, that colony is in danger and I've got to intervene. And now you can intervene right away. Now, the final component to this, which I don't know that I will get to this winter, I'm not going to promise it. I've done some rough scoping on pricing. I haven't really done enough with it yet. It's something I recently just kind of came up with. But I've got the math to about $20 to $25 per hive. And it is going to incorporate weight sensors as well. So now for about 20, like I said, I think it's, I can get it to almost $15, but I got to order direct from China and stuff like that to do it. So probably $20, $25 a hive, leveraging the existing hardware with just a couple more sensors, basically. Now we've got weight data, we've got cluster data, we've got all of this actionable information. Now, there are some really, really big variables in here, things that I don't know about. One of them is, how do I protect all of these sensors in the hive? Now, the only thing that I can think of is when I saw them, and I'm sorry this is a bad example, and most of you won't know this. If you've ever seen a Claymore mine in the Army, there's a blasting cap on a wire, and you have to put the blasting cap into the Claymore and then screw it down to secure it. And then that Claymore wire hooks up to, you know, the activating device that sends the energy to detonate the Claymore mine. I know this is weird, and I'm sorry, but the temperature sensor, it looks like a blasting cap for a Claymore mine. That's about what it looks like. When you run all of these sensors in the hive, the bees, obviously, as you know, anything that is foreign to them, they're going to try to propolize it. They're going to build comb over it and around it. So that's kind of the tricky part to figure out. How do I want to do this? Is there a way that I can integrate them ahead of time and maybe have them wrapped in some way with a little bit of hardware cloth? So maybe they'll propolize it a little bit, but it won't make a difference. Like, let's say that they theoretically propolize the whole thing 95% shut. It still is metal, the underlying, the underlying alloy of it, and it's metal. So it should still conduct the heat and the temperature of the hive. Would that affect its accuracy? Does it make sense to only try to add these at the very end of the season when they're not, you know, making as much propolis or any at all? So there's a lot of weird bee-specific moving parts to it, but I still think it's very valid. I think it's going to be a lot of fun, and I really want all of you at home to be able to follow along, and if you want to build the same thing, build it. Now, I was trying not to give it all away, but at the beginning, that's why I didn't go into the video too much. But on the video, I'm going to basically break down every part. I'm going to say, here are what the ESP32 boards look like. Here is the temperature modules. Here's the probes. Here's this. Here's that. I'll have a full list of everything that is going into the entire solution. I will have it in one place in video number one. Subsequent videos to that will be me saying, okay, I'm not going to show you how terrible my soldering skills are, but I'm putting all of these components in right here. Oh, through the magic of television or video or whatever, now they're done. So I will do some abbreviated things. And like I said, I'll do my best to chunk them into these 10 to 15 minute videos so that it's not too much to consume and people don't tune out, because it still baffles me. But hopefully I will provide you with enough information to where you'll be able to do the whole thing in the exact same way that I did. In the projects section of the Beekeeping for Newbies homepage, I will put the detailed plans on there. I don't know that I will script everything out for you. If I'm able to script it out and make an install where you can just run an executable on your Raspberry Pi and you can just copy my code and paste it in there, I am more than happy to give that to you. Like, I'm not trying to sell this as a solution and be a millionaire, and that's not my goal. My goal is to create something that's really cool that I can use and have fun with, and hopefully you can too. So if you have anything you want to contribute, if you have ideas, I am all ears about, you know, taking suggestions and collaborating with people and having some fun with this whole thing. But that's the plan. Like, that's the big project. And I'm going to keep you guys in the loop on everything as we go. I will get recording probably within the next couple of weeks. And, you know, we'll see how it all comes together. I think that the whole thing is only going to cost, I mean, I think it's like maybe $300. I think that when you look at, well, that won't be everything. That's not going to include the weight sensors and all of that. But I think it's around $300. I've already bought, I don't know, like 2/3 of it. I've already got the load, you know, the load machine. I've already got the solar panel. I've got the charge controller. I've got the battery. I've got the battery box. I've got God knows how many containers of silicone sealants I can use to spray or to secure any holes that I have to drill for wiring to go through. So it's not an expensive project. If you were doing this at your home, oh, and I've got Raspberry Pis too, so I've got most of that already. But if you were doing this at your house and you wanted to start from scratch, it would probably be a little bit more because of the fact that I already have some of the hardware on hand. But, you know, a few hundred dollars, $200-$300, and you can definitely cover most of your apiary. Now, I expect this project to run, It won't be the only thing I'm working on, but it'll be running probably until like February, March timeframe before we're making room for the new bees to come in. So along that time, if you know, you come up with other project ideas or things you want to piggyback on or things you think about like, hey, we'd also be really cool to monitor this while you're there, let me know about it. I can't guarantee that we'll integrate it, but if it's something that's simple and I can just add another module or add a little bit of software, I'm happy to do that and try to incorporate some other coolness there. So thank you for joining me on this deep dive into the hive monitoring here. I think this is just the very beginning, and I will keep you updated as everything progresses. Again, thank you so much to all the Buy Me a Coffee supporters. Thank you to all of you for taking the time to listen, and I appreciate you, especially you, my favorite listener. You know who you are. Okay, take care, be kind to one another. Remember that I love you, and there's nothing you can do about it. We'll talk to you soon.